is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Jim Lloyd, The Man of the Island, by Lucy Maud Montgomery. Chapter 3, Greeting. Charlie Sloane, Gilbert Blythe, and Anne Shirley left Avonlea the following Monday morning. Anne had hoped for a fine day. Diana was to drive her to the station and they wanted this, their last drive together for some time, to be a pleasant one. But when Anne went to bed Sunday night, moaning around the windows with an ominous prophecy, which was fulfilled in the morning. Anne awoke to find raindrops pattering against her window and shadowing the pond gray surface with widening rings. Hills and seas were hidden in mist, and the whole world seemed dreary. Anne dressed in a cheerless gray dawn, for an early start was necessary to catch the boat train. She struggled against the tears that would well up in her eyes in spite of herself. She was leaving the home that was so dear to her, and something told her that she was leaving it forever. Save as a holiday refuge. Things would never be the same again. Coming back for vacations would not be living there. And oh, how dear and beloved everything was. That little white porch room, sacred to the dreams of girlhood. The old snow queen at the window. Brook in the hollow, the dryad's bubble, the haunted woods, and lover's lane. All the thousand and one dear spots were memories of the old years parted. Could she ever be really happy anywhere else? Breakfast at Green Gables that morning was a rather doleful meal. Davy, for the first time in his life, probably, could not eat, but blubbered shamelessly over his porridge. Nobody else seemed to have much appetite, save Dora, who tucked away her rations comfortably. Dora, like the immortal and most prudent Charlotte, who went on cutting bread and butter, when her friend's lover's body had been carried across on a shutter, was one of those fortunate creatures who are seldom disturbed by anything. Even at age, it took a great deal to ruffle Dora's passivity. She was sorry Anne was going away, of course, but was that any reason why she should fail to appreciate a poached egg on toast? Not at all. And seeing that Davy could not eat his, Dora ate it for him. Promptly on time, Diana appeared with horse and buggy, her rosy face glowing above the raincoat. The goodbyes had to be said then somehow. Mrs. Lynde came in from her quarters to give Anne a hearty embrace and warned her to be careful of her health, whatever she did. Marilla, brusque and tearless, pecked Anne's cheek and said she supposed door kicked and Quinlan squeaked out two decorous little tears. But Davy, who'd been crying on the back porch step ever since they rose from the table, refused to say goodbye at all. When he saw Anne coming towards him, he sprang to his feet, bolted up the back stairs, and hid in a clothes closet out of which he would not come. His muffled howls were the last sounds Anne heard as she left Green Gables. It rained heavily all the way to Bright River, to which station they had to go since the branch line train from Quantity did not connect with the boat train. Charlene Gilbert were on the station platform when they reached it, and the train was whistling. Anne had just time to get her ticket and trunk checked, say a hurried farewell to Diana, and hasten on board. She wished she were going back with Diana to Avonlea. She knew she was going to die of homesickness, and oh, if only that dismal rain would stop pouring down as if the whole world were weeping over summer vanished and joys departed. Even Gilbert's presence brought her no comfort, for Charlie Sloane was there too, and Sloanishness could be tolerated only in fine weather. It was absolutely insufferable in rain. But when the boat steamed out of Charlottetown Harbor, things took a turn for the better. wherever it may be, before I can have it. The man will be himself again. I wonder if Davy has come out of the closet yet. It was 9 at night when they trained reached Kingsport, and they found themselves in the blue-white glare of the crowded station, and felt horribly bewildered. But a moment later, she was seized by Priscilla Grant, who had come to Kingsport on Saturday. Here you are, beloved, and I suppose you're as tired as I was when I got here Saturday night. Tired? Priscilla, don't talk to me. I'm tired and green, provincial, and only about 10 years old. For pity's sake, take your poor broken down chum to some place where she can hear herself think. I'll take you right up to our boarding house and have a cab ready outside. It's such a blessing you're here, Prissy. Nobody is ever buried there now, but a few years ago they put up a beautiful monument in memory of Nova Scotian soldiers who fell in the Crimean War. It is just opposite the entrance gates, and there's scope for imagination in it, as you used to say. Here she drops at last, and the boys come in to say goodnight. Must I really shake hands with Charlie Sloan, and his hands are always so cold and fishy feeling. We must ask them to call occasionally. Miss Hannah gravely told me we could have young gentlemen callers 2 evenings in the week if they went away at a reasonable hour. And Miss Ada asked me, smiling, pleased to be sure they didn't sit on her beautiful cushions. I promised to see to it. But goodness knows where else they can sit, unless they sit on the floor. But there are cushions on everything. Miss Ada even has an elaborate Battenberg one on top of the piano. Anne was laughing by this time. Priscilla's gay chatter had the intended effect of cheering her up. Homesickness vanished for the time being, and did not even return in full force when she finally found herself alone in her little bedroom. She went to her window and looked out. The street below was dim and quiet. Across the moon, shining above the trees and old St. John's, just behind the great dark head of the monument, Anne wondered if it could have been only that morning that she had left Green Gables. She had the sense of a long passage of time with one day of change in travel years. I suppose that very moon is looking down Green Gables now, she mused, but I won't think about it that way, homesickness lies. I'm not